From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
You're listening to The Miracle Hunter Show on EWTN. I'm not The Miracle Hunter. I'm Father Edward Looney, a friend of Michael O'Neill, The Miracle Hunter. He is actually off in Italy right now filming the new Explore episodes in Milan, Turin, Florence, and Rome. And so he asked me if I could fill in for him. The Miracle Hunter and I, we've known each other. I've been a guest on the show a number of times. Also, we share a lot of the same interests. I love sainthood causes. I love miracles. I love apparitions. So it makes sense, I guess, for me to step in for him today as he is away. You know, Michael O'Neill, the Miracle Hunter, he produces a lot of content for EWTN, and you can check out some of his shows this week on EWTN. For example, They Might Be Saints is airing on Sunday, August 3rd at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, this week spotlighting Father Michael McGivney, very familiar name for those who might be involved with the Knights of Columbus. The Miracle Hunter, Michael O'Neill, examines the canonization cause of Father Michael McGivney, and who was beatified in 2020 after the miraculous cure of a young boy was attributed to him. On Saturday, August 2nd at 5 p.m. Central Time, you can tune in to Explore with the Miracle Hunter as the Miracle Hunter goes to San Giovanni Rotunda, the site of Padre Pio, the great miracle-working saint, is part of this latest subject of the journey to Italy. So meet the man known worldwide for healing miracles, for bilocation, and for exhibiting the wounds of Christ in the stigmata. Later in the show, we'll meet the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Serafino Jimenez Mala from Spain. Her feast day is August 2nd. In the 365 Days with Mary, we'll talk a little bit about Our Lady of the Angels on August 2nd from Cartago, Costa Rica. The question of the week is, how could I start the sainthood process for someone I knew? Now, this is a very interesting question because our first guest is going to be talking about their daughter, who I strongly believe could have a cause for sainthood one day, as I got to know the family during the terminal illness and such, and just thought it'd be great to explore that. Little did I know that that was going to be the question of the week. And then we have the miracle of the day, which is Valmalla, Italy, dating August 2nd, 1834. It was a Marian apparition. We'll be talking about those later in the show. In the latest in the miracle news, a person who was clinically dead for 20 minutes. It's recounted as a miracle. Her name was Melissa. She was 35 years of age from Christie Downs, South Australia. She collapsed after a coughing fit just before going on a date. Her friend found her with no pulse and not breathing and immediately performed CPR. Emergency responders then administered 7 defibrillator shocks and 3 doses of adrenaline. She was placed in an induced coma in Flinders Hospital. Now, when she arrived at the hospital, the medical staff gave her less than 1% chance of survival. Remarkably, though, she awakened after a week in a coma and then had to relearn the basic tasks of walking, talking, recognizing her children during 6 weeks of rehab at the Hampstead Rehabilitation Center. Now, in the medical and personal aftermath of all this, she described a near-death experience that she underwent at that time. She says that while she was unconscious, she described a peaceful, calming near-death experience, an NDE. She recalls seeing a white light and feeling no pain or fatigue. She shares that that was a miracle in itself. So notice no mention of the Lord there, but one of those common things of going to a light and not feeling pain as well. The doctors identified that she had 2 benign brain tumors post-recovery alongside a hypoxic brain injury that resulted in some memory and coordination loss. Now, Melissa, she refers to this day as a birthday, a new birthday, a symbolic celebration for her and her family to help them heal emotionally. She now dedicates herself to raising awareness about the importance of CPR training. So taking this very terrible incident in her life and turning it into something good, giving public talks and advocacy. And most notably, she'll be emceeing the Brain Injury South Australia's Brain Awareness Week launch event on August 18th, 2025. So that's the miracle news. Not a lot of God or intercession of the saints there, but just the miracle of the very fact of recovery and regaining health after such a traumatic incident. Each week, the Miracle Hunter features Catholic pub trivia. And so he asks a trivia question and gives out a prize, the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary, to the emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. So you can send your answers to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. Last week, the question was, what city is the devotion of Our Lady of Snows originally from? And that dates back to the city of Rome. On August 5th, actually, is the feast day. We celebrate it as St. Mary Major, this basilica that a wealthy but childless Roman couple, John and his wife, decided to leave their fortune to the church. The Virgin appeared to them on August 4th and told them that she wished a basilica to be constructed on the hill that would be outlined in snow. Pope Liberius also received the same vision. So two things going on, two confirmations of this. When they met on the top of the hill, they discovered the footprint of a church outlined in snow, and the Pope ordered the construction of St. Mary Major Basilica. Although Pope Sixtus III did not include the story, when he rededicated the basilica a few centuries later and was removed in 1969 from the general Roman calendar, on the feast of Our Lady of Snows in Rome, white petals dropped from the ceiling of the church to commemorate the legend of the miracle. So a lot of times in these Roman churches, they drop rose petals, for example, on the Feast of Pentecost, and here on Our Lady of Snows, August 5th, they drop white rose petals. So that was last week's question. This week's question, in what century was St. Simon Stock the recipient of the Brown Scapular and Our Lady of Mount Carmel apparitions? In what century was he canonized? So I've had the pleasure of visiting Aylesford, England, where St. Simon Stock received the Brown Scapular and where there are some relics of his. So what century was he canonized? So now we need to take a short break. But when we come back, we'll be talking with a friend of mine, Jean Kelleher, and we'll be talking with her about her daughter, Kendra, and learning more about possibly the aura of holiness and such that surrounded her young teenage daughter's life. Stay tuned for The Miracle Hunter. More to come on EWTN Radio.
Now, back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN Radio. I'm Father Edward Looney, not The Miracle Hunter. Michael O'Neill is off in Italy. And this week, the question of the week is, I think my friend who has died was a saint. How can I start the canonization process? How fitting, because really this is the conversation we're kind of having. There's no canonization process talk or anything, but sometimes we get introduced to individuals who had an aura of holiness. And there are lots of stories that circulate online. You know, there's this young mother who died of cancer. She had an Instagram page, Blessed by Cancer, and she died in Detroit last year, 2024. And so some people, you know, I think really have a sense of holiness around her life, for example, of suffering. That there was this young man in Minnesota, Charles Untz, who died as a teenager in 2000. The Pillar Catholic actually just did a piece about him, a beautiful article that was published on July 21st by Jack Figg. So you have that. There's a guy over in Scotland named Joe Wilson that died from a cardiac event, a high school student, and they really are launching a canonization process for him. So there are all of these different stories of people that maybe you and I know who could possibly be saints. They might be saints. That's one of the things Michael O'Neill talks about. And so I want to talk a little bit about a young woman named Kendra Kelleher, and her mother, Jean Kelleher, is joining us now. So thanks so much, Jean, for sharing today a little bit about your daughter.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. Yes. So Kendra, our daughter, she was actually born on Valentine's Day of the year 2000. And so when she was born, we were obviously thrilled. However, we didn't know what was coming down the line with her. And at the age of 5 and a half, she was diagnosed with tumors of her nervous system. And there were tumors found in her brain, behind her eye, in her both of her legs. And so it was about 12 years of suffering until her death in 2017. So in the midst of it, we were trying to find different ways to basically draw closer to Christ, but ultimately she was the one that was helping to lead us. And after her diagnosis in August of 2005, it was friends who had recommended taking her to Eucharistic Adoration. And we had never heard of what Eucharistic Adoration was. And ultimately at that point, we still remember that moment, her arms at 5 and a half years old, with our first time ever going, her arms went up, 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 open wide, up to the monstrance. And I had never even seen a monstrance before, to my knowledge. So at that point, I knew something was already happening. And she was bringing us closer to understanding who this person, Christ, really was. And then it continued with her suffering, a lot of appointments, doctor's appointments. And ultimately, there was a time when I was getting closer to when she was requesting to receive the Eucharist early. She was 7 years old. However, she received it after receiving her first confession. Her first confession was October 13th of the year 2007, and she received her first Holy Communion on October 14th in the year 2007. So that was beautiful. In addition to that, the prayer was answered of hers on the fact that she had actually been praying for a baby sister. And at that time, obviously, like the years prior to that, my husband and I were closed off to life because we were fearful of children with other diseases. So ultimately, though, her prayer was answered, and her sister Elizabeth, our daughter, was then also baptized on that same day when Kendra received First Holy Communion. So life continued. She was very pro-life. She loved the unborn. She'd pray for the unborn. She'd pray for more siblings, which, yes, then ultimately she has more siblings. But then the holiness that we started seeing, which was humbling, was her request to go to shrines, request to go to the one in particular that really is a big memory. On the way home from appointment in Milwaukee, we were driving back, and we had never been at that point yet to Holy Hill when she was younger. And she had requested to go to someone's house, and she asked my husband and I, said, you know whose house that is, don't you? No. But then we looked at each other, we saw this billboard, Holy Hill. So we went there, and then we started seeing even more of what she was really being drawn to. St. Therese, in a particular way, found a journal article eventually of hers after she passed that she asked St. Therese to be her patroness when she was about 9 years old, that she was already relating to that suffering, which we had learned more about. And then ultimately when it got, yes, towards the time she had a dream of going to Lourdes, the Lourdes Grotto over in France, and that prayer was answered, thanks be to God. And then it was eventually, when it got closer to her time of passing, she would select her clothing that she would pick out each day, even though she was getting very weak. And also, she was very drawn to that totus tuus, the totally yours. And she had selected the t-shirt that said totus tuus, and that is the shirt that ultimately she ended up passing away in while she was wearing her oxygen mask, her oxygen tube. So that was a good message to us of ultimately that keep giving yourself totally to the Lord.
Yeah, so you mentioned a few things there, you know, that she chose St. Therese as a patron, and she actually had the chance to go to Lisieux to to where St. Therese was from and everything like that. And that was because we have a mutual friend. And so that mutual friend kind of put us in touch and we talked about going to France. I was going to France to do some research for a project. And so your husband, your daughter, and then that friend went along on this trip, and we ended up in Lourdes and all of that. So a lot of those dreams you mentioned, Lourdes, that came true. So now tell us, what type of illness did she have? Because she had tumors, right? And they were like, they would grow quite large, if I remember right.
Yes, correct. So when she was initially diagnosed, that was August of 2005, the findings were located in her brain, behind her eye, and in the bone marrow of her right leg, and then a thin plexiform neurofibroma in her left leg. It would web all the way into her, like into the area there. And that the tumors had to be watched. And I say already miraculously, towards the beginning of it, the one in the brain that could have gotten really problematic through the prior life that started to increase, at one point they did the MRI and they found that that one did not appear anymore. So we say, thank you, Lord, for that. But the one in her left leg, it was actually after coming back from a March for Life. She had come home. She had joined a group of 40 or so to pray outside of Planned Parenthood at the March for Life there, because that's where they would give the free abortions during that time. And her and another group were praying, and she was so excited to call home and tell us that a mother had changed her mind who was going into Planned Parenthood, and she decided to keep the baby. So at that time, we found out we were expecting our little Mary as well. But Kendra's tumor, the tumor had grown and was starting to grow and grow, and eventually it did become a 3-pound tumor that needed to be removed. So that was removed, and she had several painful surgeries after that in the month of May 2016. However, the cancer that was at that point considered that cancer, even though the tumor was removed, she was actually, the cancer had come back in September and then took her life in January 5th of 2017.
And so for her then, in this whole process, of course, praying for healing. That's why you go to Lourdes, pray for that miraculous healing, and that didn't happen. And so, but there was kind of this acceptance that she was able to have about where the Lord was leading her to everlasting life and such. So, as we talk about someone maybe that has this aura of holiness, and you know, just the great cause for life that she held dear to her, the spirituality that she had. I know that you have some journal articles, some journal entries, I mean, and some letters that she wrote and things like that, that, you know, you look at that and you say, there's something special here. And another thing people look for is, well, is there, they call this the cultus of devotion. So after the death, are people still talking about her? Did people say, oh, you know, I asked Kendra to pray for me, and, you know, we call this graces received. So are there any stories related to that?
There are, actually, and again, quite humbling. The one little baby who we met the mother while at the hospital in Milwaukee when Kendra was still getting treatment, that mother was told to, at a previous hospital, to abort the child. And because of baby would have so many health problems. Well, that baby is one who Kendra had a special prayer for. And that baby, her health started improving as soon as Kendra's health was deteriorating. And so Kendra was offering, she knew she'd offer up her suffering for the unborn and so forth. That baby is still, the child is beautiful, health conditions. But there are couples who've asked for her prayers, for Kendra's prayers, for finding a good holy spouse. They have reached out to me, other women who are trying to have a child, whether through adoption or natural conception. They have now been very blessed. And some other priests have said that she just has a special place in their hearts for helping, because Kendra would offer her suffering for priests as well. And so with the people who are reaching out, there was one young lady in particular who is not of the Catholic faith, and she actually is now fully in the faith after learning more about Kendra, she wanted to read more as far as how she got through things. So that's been absolutely humbling to hear those stories as well come in.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Kendra died back in 2017. I was at the funeral, and I was able to say Mass a few times at your home as, you know, the diagnosis and as it was progressing towards end of life. And so that was really a blessed moment for me to pray with you and to pray with her. And so, you know, 2017, it's 2025 now. And so we just see the fact that, well, people are still talking about her. She's not forgotten. And that her friends then and others, you know, that there is still this spiritual influence that she's able to have, even though she's passed from this life.
Yes, and we're very grateful for, yeah, all that you've done with that, and to really understand, to see that this is real, and heaven is real, and there are people that are truly longing for prayers for those who have passed.
I think, too, something you said earlier that was quite beautiful, and we see this a lot in different youthful saints, I think. So we have Blessed Carlos Acutis, who's going to be canonized. I'm actually going to be at the canonization by accident. I'm attending the Palmy meeting in Rome, and it just so happens when it was rescheduled for that weekend that I was there for that conference. But his mother attributes Carlos to really bringing her to faith and belief and deepening of that faith. And so for you, you said earlier that, you know, you didn't know what adoration was, but Kendra led you there. And now your family is very much alive in the Catholic faith. You treasure the devotions and the prayers and everything like that. So she led you, I would almost say, to that. And then that's allowed to flourish and continue to grow.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And I look at those days and I am humbled when I think of the direction that I was going prior to her diagnosis, because ultimately it was in her continual offering for suffering and wanting to just lead closer to Christ. And essentially even Christmas Mass, she was very determined, the Christmas Mass before she passed away, even though she was in so much pain, she was in excruciating, at times when she'd be here, it would flare up, but she was determined. And we were able to get there for the morning Mass. That was her last one. And then she ended up passing away that January 5th, closer to the Epiphany. But now, through encouraging my husband with artwork, to draw religious artwork more, the journaling, the different things, yes, all the different devotions, Sacred Heart, Immaculate Heart, going to different shrines, now encouraging others to also embrace the faith and go to different holy places. We scheduled a few pilgrimages to in particular, Our Lady of Champion. That's where she would experience so much peace. She would have so much healing there, just in the sense of being there.
Well, all very beautiful. This is a story I think people should be on the lookout for, maybe more to come in the future. I wrote an article after her death, you know, a young girl with cancer who inspired me. It was published over on Catholic Exchange. So thanks so much, Jean, for sharing a little bit about Kendra's life. And, you know, hopefully maybe somebody listening, maybe they found a new intercessor for the pro-life cause in their own life or something like that. So thanks so much for sharing her story today.
Yes. Well, thank you, Father. I appreciate it so much.
Again, a special thanks to my guest, Jean Kelleher, sharing about Kendra today. And now we have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have a little bit more information about the 365 Days with Mary, Miracles, and Sainthood News. So stay tuned to EWTN Radio for more from the Miracle Hunter Show.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
And we're back with the Miracle Hunter. I'm Father Edward Looney, not the Miracle Hunter. He is off in Italy filming some new shows for the Eternal Word Television Network. And I'm very honored to be filling in for him today. You can follow me on social media at Fr. Edward Looney. Also, if you're interested in holy places that I've visited, my book Places of Grace, available online as well. So as we come back, there's a lot that we can talk about. And Michael has his 365 Days with Mary and so many other news items that we can address now. So let's get to that. And really, I think we kind of answered a little bit of that question of the week. I think my friend who has died was a saint. How can I start the canonization process? The church looks at the holiness of the individual, so it's brought forward to the local church. That hasn't been done in the case of Kendra. Maybe one day I've been kind of collecting things with the family and alongside the family to maybe explore that one day in the future. But then the church kind of begins their own process of starting to evaluate, looking at writings, and it's a whole ordeal. So nothing is done overnight, and it takes a long time for things like this to happen. But I would say if you're thinking about that for someone you know, maybe just start talking to your local priest or maybe someone at the diocese and just see what their thoughts are about that. With the 365 Days with Mary, you can pick up the app in the Apple App Store, but it's August 2nd, Our Lady of the Angels, Cartago, Costa Rica, 1635, that a person named Juana Pereira, a mestiza, while gathering firewood, found a carved black stone resembling the Virgin and Child. On August 2nd, 1635, she took the small 3-inch image to her home and put it away in a box. The next day, when she was out again, she found an identical carving on the same rock. When she went home to place it also in that box, she found that the first one was no longer there. This happens a lot. This is the story of Our Lady of Cobre, for example. So she locked the second one up. On the third day, it happened again. She found the same image in the same place and found that the locked box was empty. When the parish priest placed it in the church's tabernacle, the image again returned, prompting everyone to agree to build a shrine. The feast of La Negrita, the patron saint of Costa Rica, is celebrated August 2nd. The miracle of the day comes to us from Valmalla, Italy, 1834. It's a Marian apparition. The shepherds went to graze their herds on the plateau called the Chiotto, where the shrine now stands. Suddenly, with great astonishment, they saw before them, standing on a stone slab, a lady of majestic appearance in their 20s. She wore a long dress with a belt tied to the sides, reddish in color, on which the head, down a long blue veil, held his neck by a gold button. The lady always appeared alone with open hands, the traditional attitude of the Mother of Mercy. She was sad and in tears. There is agreement that has not spoken, except perhaps to ask a chapel to be built on the site. Particularly important were the appearances of on August 6th, the day Our Lady appeared to the four shepherdesses, the seers of the neighboring village of Valmalla, Maria Pitavino, 12 years of age, Margarita Maria Pitavino, Maria Chiotto, and Maria Boschero. In addition to the four Marys, according to some witnesses, including Ciafredo, a brother of Margarita Maria, was present also. The first appearance was August 2nd. The appearances followed many times over 50 days. And on the first Sunday of August of 1946, Our Lady Queen of Valmalla was solemnly crowned by Archbishop Luigi Lanzo Gile, the Bishop of Saluzza in the diocese. From March 19th to July 30th, 1949, the statue of the Mother of Mercy venerated at the shrine was chosen for the Pilgrimage of Mary and brought in all the parishes of the diocese. In August 1949, in memory of the pilgrimage, it was placed on the forecourt of the shrine's artistic marble statue of the Heavenly Queen. In sainthood news, from Alitea, they report that the Orthodox have recognized their first Native American saint. Born in 1917 and a member of the Yupik people, she was a wife and a mother known for her compassion. She was born in the Alaskan tundra and has celebrated a liturgical glorification ceremony in her home village last month by the Orthodox Church in America, the first North American Orthodox woman saint. Her name, Olga, again, a member of the Yupik people. She lived with her family and community in southwestern Alaska. She had 13 children, only 8 lived to adulthood, and helped birth many more as a midwife. She was known for her generosity and simplicity, consistently helping those who needed it, from women suffering from trauma and abuse to the elderly and the sick. In his canonization homily, the Orthodox Archbishop Alexei Trader said of Olga, "The world praises loud greatness, but heaven treasures quiet holiness. Saint Olga claimed no title, sought no fame, yet her compassion became her crown, her humble prayer, her strength. And now the church proclaims what many already knew in their hearts. Arasmaqua from Qalathuk was a saint, our Saint Olga. It has been said that Olga had a spiritual gift of knowing when her help was needed without being told. And after her death, people have recounted the same sort of prayerful help from Olga, especially when seeking healing. Interesting, you know, Orthodox, they have their saints as well. And you go, you see their iconostasis, and you see them, the people that they venerate from their tradition. In the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Serafino Jimenez Mala, celebrated August 2nd. She was born in 1861 in Catalonia, Spain. A lifelong layman, he had a little education and was possibly illiterate, but his native intelligence was obvious to all who knew him, and he was known for his love of nature. He was baptized as an adult and married Teresa Jimenez Castro in 1912 at the age of 51. He was the adoptive father of his niece Pepita, became a mule trader around 1920, and did so as he was able to settle down as a businessman. He was widowed in 1922, served as a city councilman, a catechist, a Eucharistic minister, choir director, and rosary leader. Serafino developed a reputation for holiness, and people would be on their best behavior around him. Isn't that the greatest, when people know that they need to be a better person because of who you are? He was an advisor to his bishop at a Dominican tertiary as well. And he worked to improve relations between the gypsies and the non-gypsies. And he was arrested during the persecutions of the Spanish Civil War for hiding priests. He was offered his freedom if he would renounce his faith and throw away his rosary. He declined and died as a martyr by the firing squad on August 8th, 1936, in the cemetery of Barbastro, Spain, buried in an unmarked grave. He was beatified by Pope John Paul, by St. John Paul II, in 1996. Decreed a martyr in 1996, beatified in 1997 on May the 4th. And finally, this week on They Might Be Saints, Sunday, August 3rd at 1:30 p.m., catch the episode about Father Michael McGivney, about the founder of the Knights of Columbus. It's time now for us to take a short break here on EWTN Radio from the Miracle Hunter Radio Show. I'm Father Edward Looney, filling in for Michael O'Neill this week, and I'll be back with you in a few moments.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Well, welcome back to the Miracle Hunter Show on EWTN. I am not the Miracle Hunter, Michael O'Neill. I am Father Edward Looney, a priest of the Diocese of Green Bay. You can follow me on social media at Fr. Edward Looney, or check out my latest book, Places of Grace. And one of the things I love doing is I love traveling. People that follow me on social media know that I visit shrines on my day off. Like, it's not unheard of for me to maybe jump on a plane Sunday night, get somewhere, fly back Monday evening. I did that recently for the Blessed Stanley Rother Shrine, for example. So I love visiting holy sites, praying there, encountering the graces that God has in store for us. And as an author and speaker and all that, I received an invitation a while back to visit Star of the Sea Parish in San Francisco, California. And I headed down to San Francisco then to preach a Lenten mission there, and was introduced to Father Ilo, the pastor of the parish, and Mariela Zavallos, who's our guest today. And they have something going on quite amazingly at this parish. Is not only do they have adoration all day, and I was really moved by kind of the prayer and the rhythm of the parish and everything. In fact, it influenced me in some changes in my own parish that I pastor in the Diocese of Green Bay. And so they have these little altars, these little shrines to Our Lady, about 16 of them. And so I thought, why not talk about them and to learn a little bit more why they have them. So thank you so much, Mariela, for coming on to share about Star of the Sea Parish.
Well, it is a pleasure, Father Looney, and thank you for this invitation. I am super excited to tell a little bit about our shrine and how did this came about. So it happened after a visit that our pastor, Father Joseph Bailo, had to the National Shrine of Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. And, you know, after seeing all the chapels there, and I think there are like about 80 chapels and oratories, to honor our mother. He had that in mind, and I understand he spoke with our Archbishop Salvatore Corleone, and after a good conversation, he gave his blessing, and we began a project to build 16 of the most important apparitions around the world. And this project began like around, I'll say like around August, actually, 2021. And it took us about 2 years to get all the images and statues. And it's been almost 4 years since we are, open to anyone that wants to visit every shrine. You've seen those, Father. And so I think there are small spaces in the church, but beautiful and good enough for prayer.
So tell us a little bit about all this, because they're all custom made, right? You sent it off, and they were. It's not like you bought these statues from a catalog. They're all created uniquely for your parish.
Yes, they are. And so we had a vendor here in California. And when we began talking about the different images that we wanted, and we wanted a specific size, so it's 48 inches. And so I'll say like maybe three of our shrines, they already existed, so the design was there. But they made those for us to have the right size. And other than those, we began from scratch. So the making of the images and shrine was like a pilgrimage, actually, like a constant pilgrimage. We were reading many books about the apparitions. We looked at many images and the representations of Virgin Mary in the different places. And also we investigated about the devotional practices in other countries. So when we were collecting all that information, we began the process. And most of the statues were made in Colombia and South America. So something beautiful that I think is already a grace from Our Lady is that in that process, we had so many demands. Like we wanted Our Lady, understanding that each country represents, you know, the apparition with different faces. And the way that I see it is, and that I always explain to especially children, that we have one mother, is Virgin Mary, but the different faces, when she appeared, she loved people so much that she wanted to relate to them. So that's why the one from China looked Chinese, and Our Lady of Guadalupe, even though that's a miracle itself, it relates to the people in each country. So working with the vendor here got to the point that he couldn't kind of keep my demands, I'll say, in a friendly way, though. Like, you know, no, the eyes need to be, you know, more, the expression should be more humble. She should be looking down. And so in all that process, they put us in touch with the sculptors, the artisans that were working in South America. And I have to say that if you come and see our images, even though they show the cultural aspect of each one, when you look at each of the images, the face is humble, it's loving, motherly, and I think all of them represent one face of Virgin Mary.
That's very beautiful. There are lots of different images of Mary in your church. You have Our Lady of Lourdes, Our Lady of Bonneau, Our Lady of Champion from Wisconsin. You have Our Lady of Good Success and many others as well. It's a very vast and wide collection. Which one is your favorite, or which one are you drawn to pray in front of or before?
I will say that Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal is the one that I tend to go. And I was blessed to be in Paris, so I went to her shrine and I bought my own Miraculous Medal in Paris, you know, next to the shrine. I attended a mass there, so I was impacted by the whole story. And it's something that I will say is a miracle or a grace that I received. My mother died 4 years ago, and when we heard she had cancer, when we heard that She didn't have much time to leave. We were just shocked. I'm talking about four sisters. And so I was literally like in physical pain just with the thought that she was going to be gone soon. And I was waking up every day with my whole body was in pain. And I just couldn't understand the whole thing. It was unbearable. So I remember I attended a mass in one of the Sunday masses, and I was in that pain. And before I went to receive my communion, I begged Our Lady, and I was praying to the title, the Miraculous Medal, and holding my medal, please help me and heal my body. I cannot, you know, hold this anymore. And so I just received communion, came back, and I was meditating. And then out of, you know, nothing, I noticed that I had no pain. And to be honest, since that day, even when she died, I have not had the physical pain. And even the spiritual one, I understood why things happen. And it's a long story, you know, maybe some other time when we have time, we could talk about that. But so she was also the image that we chose for her prayer cards when she died. And I tend to go and light candles to that. And I will say that it is a favorite title also. Many people pray to that shrine, and, you know, many people ask if we have miraculous medals. So that is one of my favorite ones. And the other one, believe it or not, Our Lady of Champion, I also visited Wisconsin, and I was able to spend like 4 days in, you know, in a conference, but I visited the shrine. And I collaborate with the Walk to Mary, the organization. So I am a volunteer representing California. So the first weekend in May, we have our Walk to Mary. And I promote a lot the devotion to Our Lady of Champion because, you know, she is the only one approved in the United States. So with a Walk to Mary, you know, we make a lot of, we bring a lot of light to that shrine. We put flowers, we light candles, we talk about the message to Sister Adele. And I know that you've written some books too, Father, so it is another favorite one, and always with the intention that people, you know, get to know her better.
I think that is the beauty of these shrines, that someone would stop and they visit there, and maybe they'll learn something. For example, I never heard of Our Lady of China or the Philippines Marian devotion that's referenced there. So it was really a learning experience for me. Now, if you think about how many Catholics don't know about Marian apparitions or all these different devotions, they will go from altar to altar and they're going to learn something. They're going to pray. They're going to light a candle. When I was there, I went from altar to altar, and I said a prayer at each one. To each Madonna, I gave a special intention. I thought what you shared was so beautiful, the grace that you and your family received. When other people come, are you hearing that others are receiving answered prayers from the prayers they've said at these altar shrines?
Yes, I'll say yeah. So what I'm doing now, I'm offering like tours in the church, and we have like short tours, and I mean a few hours in one of them. We call it like a pilgrimage day at Star of the Sea. And I talk to people, you know, I've had groups of 10 people coming from other cities. They've seen us online. Sometimes they want to visit San Francisco and trying to find a church in the city, sometimes looking for a Latin mass. So they find us on the website, and I end up, you know, giving like these tours. And yeah, you know, I've had one specific one that I can remember right now is I had a lady that she was very attracted to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And so after I talked and introduced them to all the shrines, she said that she was going to go back because she reminded her of something special. And what happened is that she was praying for conversion for her husband. And she said that she, you know, she wears a scapular, and she was praying novenas and praying to Our Lady and attending daily masses and doing adoration. And I don't know how long was that process, but she said that her husband now is practicing the faith, and as a family, they are more united. And I've heard other things like experiencing like physical and spiritual healings. Like one lady was talking about her devotion to Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal, And she said that she was praying every day for about 4 or 5 weeks for healing. She didn't say exactly what was her physical or spiritual need, but she said that after a few weeks of praying, attending masses, and she always wears her miraculous medal, she showed it to me. She said that she experienced that healing, and she could just say to anyone that prayer is important and God listens to our prayers.
Wow. Stories like that, graces received, praise reports, they're all very inspiring. There are two things that are so special about Star of the Sea Parish. You have adoration in the church, your church is beautiful, and you're really drawn in through the art and are lifted up to contemplate the grandeur of God when you visit. People come there for adoration, for mass, for confessions. And then, as an aside, they can visit Our Lady as well. They visit the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament, and then Mary at her various altars. The other special thing about Star of the Sea is that people who might not be able to afford going to Lourdes or Fatima or Guadalupe or Ecuador to Our Lady of Good Success, but they can come to your church in your area, especially if they live in California, and they can visit the little shrines. If someone is from China or the Philippines, they can feel a closeness with the image of Our Lady at that shrine altar. This is truly a gift that Star of the Sea Parish is offering to people.
Yes, Father, and we are really blessed to have the opportunity to have that for other people. And I have actually heard those same stories. They call us and they say, you know, we cannot go anywhere because we don't have the means, we don't have money to go, but, you know, let's say they live in Sacramento, we want to come and visit, and we are open 7 days a week, and we have 3 masses daily. We pray the rosary after each mass, so 3 communal rosary prayers. We have adoration, so people come, and then when they are here, they always express that they have this sense of peace inside of the church. And I will say, because God is present all the time, like, you know, in all the churches, but having the Blessed Sacrament exposed 24/7 is a huge blessing for our church. And you know, we love that motto from St. Louis Montfort, like, through Jesus to Mary. We do that here. So many people have done the consecration to Our Lady. And again, like you say, if they cannot go to other places, they are here. So I always emphasize when I have the tours that if they have a devotion to Our Lady, that pray at home, pray the rosary. There is beautiful churches that have different images, but if they can't even go to one that have, you know, these 16 beautiful Marian apparitions, they can always pray at home. So Father Ilo had made 16 trifles with the stories of each of the apparitions. So those are always available for people to come that come to visit us, and they can get those brochures. I also have that information online. And so something that I'm doing these days is that we are doing novenas for each of the apparitions. And so we're going to have one, actually kind of 2 in August, is Our Lady of Knock from Ireland, then Our Lady of Częstochowa from Poland, and then Our Lady of La Salette, which is towards September. And then October, you know, we have Our Lady of Champions. So what I did is I created a Flack Note. We communicate through Flack Note, and I sent the invitation for people to do the novenas before the feast. With the feast, each of our shrines, we put flowers and then we put candles. And to be, you know, really honest, people light candles every day. So you see all our church, because we have the 2 aisles with the apparitions, you always see warm light there because the candles are lit.
I always say that the candle is a sign of the petition that people have left behind. They cannot perpetually pray, but Our Lady, from her place in heaven, sure can. A beautiful place to visit. If you're ever in the San Francisco or Bay Area, make sure you get to Star of the Sea Catholic Parish. You will be blown away and transported into the heavenly realm, and you'll be seeking the intercession of the Blessed Virgin. Thanks so much, Mariella, for sharing about these Marian shrines and for being with us today on the Miracle Hunter Show. We were just talking with Mariela Zavallos from the Star of the Sea Parish in San Francisco and the beautiful Marian devotion that they are fostering there for parishioners and pilgrims. That's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd also like to thank Jean Kelleher and Mariela Zavallos for joining us today as my guests for sharing about their special topics. This week on Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Saturday, August 2nd at 5 p.m. Central Time, you can learn more about Padre Pio and San Giovanni Rotondo. It was my honor and privilege to fill in for Michael O'Neill today on The Miracle Hunter Show. I hope I didn't disappoint. I encourage you to follow me on social media at the handle at FR Edward Looney, or you can get my latest book, Places of Grace. Thanks for tuning in to The Miracle Hunter Show on EWTN, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you are a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.